Something is coming. Something hungry for blood. A shadow grows on the wall behind you, swallowing you in darkness. It is almost here.
What is it?
What if it's the Demogorgon? Oh, Jesus, we're so screwed if it's the Demogorgon.
It's not the Demogorgon. An army of troglodytes charge into the chamber.
Troglodytes.
Told you.
Yes, I think I recognize that clip. So producer Claire McGrain is here with me. Claire, tell us what that was.
That was a game of Dungeons & Dragons, also called D&D, and you recognize it because it was a scene from Stranger Things, the Netflix show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent. But why are we starting this show with that clip?
Because of this week's listener question. What is it about the Seattle region that makes geek culture thrive? So I saw this come in, and I was really excited to do an episode on this question because I am a big geek, geeky and proud.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really kind of broad question. Geek culture, like any culture, is big. It's complex. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to focus on one thing. And to help me decide what that thing should be, I went to one of my favorite geeky spots in Seattle, this restaurant slash game store called Mox Boarding House. And I asked some of my fellow geeks what they thought.
Maybe it's just because it's so cloudy all the time and like people just want to stay inside and like play video games.
I think it's that there's like a punk culture in Seattle.
Seattle has a large tech population and there tends to be an overlap between those two cultures.
Seattle as a whole is pretty young. I think our age group likes to game.
I think it's because our city is more liberal. Like, people aren't hung up on the expectations of other people.
People have a lot of different kinds of ideas about this.
Totally. And they are not necessarily wrong. All of those things influence the city and its culture. But the number of ideas wasn't really helping me focus.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got this one answer.
I mean, we've had almost all of the major tabletop games, so Wizards of the Coast, Paizo, all of those, they're all based out of the Pacific Northwest area. We have a strong industry of it, so this is kind of like home turf.
Ah, tabletop games. What does that mean?
Yes, that means games like Dungeons & Dragons, where you sit around a table and you play a character and you roll dice and all that fun stuff.
And is what he said true? So does Seattle have a strong tabletop game industry?
It does. So he mentioned Wizards of the Coast. That is a company based in Renton, and they make Dungeons & Dragons, which is the biggest tabletop game in the world.
So D&D is made here.
Yes, it is. And the more that I thought about it, I realized if we want to talk about geekiness in Seattle, we really have to talk about D&D. And in fact, to talk about geekiness, period, we have to talk about D&D. Because it's really the starting point of geekiness as we know it today. So I think exploring all these connections between Dungeons & Dragons and Seattle and geek culture will lead us to an answer to our listeners' question.
From KUOW in Seattle, this is Sound Cues, a podcast fueled by listener curiosity. I'm your host, Anna Boyko-Wyrock. Claire, to answer this question, can we go on a quest?
Oh my gosh, I would love to go on a quest with you. In fact, I even have some special quest music. Do you have your staff?
I have my staff. I have my owl. What else do I need?
I'll bring food.
Okay, that's great. So I'm not really an experienced quest-er. How do we start looking for the answer to our listener's question?
Well, the first step in any quest is being prepared, planning your route, packing snacks, etc.
Makes sense.
And to prepare for this quest, we need to understand what it's like to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons. And this is important because it helps you understand why the game is unique.
Right. And you play D&D, right?
Yes, I do. Right now, I am in a game where I play a teenage sorceress with an attitude problem.
Does that say something about you as a person, Claire? Like, are there things that you're working out?
Maybe. Maybe I wasn't enough of a brat when I was a teenager, so I'm trying to relive it.
Okay. All right. So I played D&D a few times in high school, but it's been a while, so I could use a refresher.
Absolutely. So the basic idea in Dungeons & Dragons is everyone is playing a character, and you're all working together to accomplish goals. So say, Anna, you're playing a wizard. You can do magic.
Heck yeah.
And you're trying to get into this castle.
And so I could use a spell and maybe blast a hole in the castle and walk in, or maybe I could like fly into the castle.
Totally. There's a lot of room for creativity in how you want to solve these challenges. And if you were really playing a game, you would have to roll a dice and do some maths and see if you actually are successful. But for the sake of this example, we'll say you blast a hole in the wall and you get to just walk right in. So one of the players is not playing a character. They're doing kind of what I just did. They're the game master. So they're in charge of creating the world, setting up the challenges, setting up the story, all of that.
Okay. So in a game of D&D, either you're playing a character or you're the game master and you're the one running the game.
Right.
Okay. I know this is popular with people and I know that you play it, but to be honest, I don't really understand how this could hold your attention for hours at a time. So what exactly is the appeal of this game? Why is this fun?
Well, you're in luck. I spoke to an expert who can give us a bit of a sense for that.
I'm Jilly, a halfling rogue. I collect my foes' teeth and I answer to the Raven Queen.
Oh my god, that's our expert!
Kind of. Jilly herself is not an expert. She's a D&D character. But she is played by our expert, whose name is Emmy Tanji. Emmy is an art director and a graphic designer for Dungeons & Dragons, and she plays the game a lot, as you would expect. So I asked her how she would describe it to someone who hasn't played it before.
I personally think of sitting down and playing D&D just means like an evening or an afternoon of sitting down and just talking with your friends and hanging out and telling stories and laughing. You get to see so many cool sides of people that maybe you normally wouldn't, because they're playing this fantasy character. They're being told, like, you can totally do anything, go for it, you know? And you get through these challenges together and you make these incredible memories that strangely are all done through the imagination.
Yeah, that sounds very appealing. So you're playing these characters and you can do anything you want, but Emmy is also saying that D&D is really about the connections that you're making with real people in the real world.
Exactly. And that's what we heard in that Stranger Things clip. There were four friends sitting around a table, kind of having fun together.
Okay, so now I know how the game works. I'm prepared for our quest. And it's time to find the answer to our listener's question. So our quest starts in Seattle, right?
It does not.
Oh.
D&D is made in Seattle today, but I'm sad to say it is not a Seattle native. We will come back, but our quest actually starts in the town of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, in the early 1970s. This is where D&D was created by a man called Gary Gygax.
It was published kind of famously out of the back of Gary Gygax's car.
That's Greg Tito. He's the senior communications manager for D&D, and he's a former games journalist.
So published from the back of a car. That sounds pretty DIY.
It was pretty DIY. In the early days, Gary Gygax basically sold every copy of the game himself. And the company he founded to sell it was headquartered in the basement of his house. So D&D was metaphorically and literally underground. And then in the 80s, it got caught up in the culture wars.
And remind us what happened there.
So people essentially saw this game where you're playing, you know, characters, there's magic, there's fantasy, there are demons, there are monsters, and they worried that it might be kind of leading people into maybe the occult or towards violent tendencies.
Got it.
And Greg actually had firsthand experience with this kind of misperception around D&D. Mm-hmm. He found one of the game's rule books on his brother's bookshelf when he was in elementary school, and he fell in love with this imaginary world that he found inside.
I grew up in a fairly religious household, so after my mother discovered what I was reading and what I was getting into, it was pretty strongly discouraged not to participate in all these fanciful things.
Greg still liked D&D. He read a bunch of the books. He even ended up playing it later in life. But like a lot of people, he was discouraged from playing the game during that time period.
So for the first 20 years of its life, things don't really seem to be going well for D&D.
Yeah, it had a very dedicated cult following almost, but it wasn't huge. It wasn't widely popular. And things were about to get worse. In the early 90s, a new game came on the scene. It was a card game called Magic: The Gathering, and it was made by Wizards of the Coast here in Seattle. And Magic totally blew up. It was the new thing in the geek world. Everybody was playing it. And games like D&D were becoming less popular. Mm. Gary Gygax's company was struggling to get by. So in 1996, Wizards of the Coast bought his company after putting all this pressure on it with their own game. And that was when D&D moved to Seattle. And all the people who were making the game moved here as well and brought their geekiness to the city.
Aha! So then Seattle got this big influx of geeky people, and it became the headquarters for D&D and magic.
Yes, exactly. So that in itself is one reason why geek culture thrives here, just the fact that this company is based here.
Got it. Okay. But even that, I mean, you said earlier that D&D was really important to geek culture, but when it moved to Seattle, it sounds like it probably still didn't have that big of a reach, though.
That is true. It was not super popular in the 80s and 90s. But do you know the saying about the band The Velvet Underground?
I don't know that.
Okay, it's something like, not that many people bought a Velvet Underground album, but everyone who did started their own band.
Okay, which is to say that something that has a small reach can have a really big impact through the people it inspires.
Exactly. And that's what happened with D&D. But instead of starting bands, people who played D&D went on to make other games and to write novels and really to start the infrastructure of geek culture.
Aha!
So Emmy, the art director, she told me that video games are a really obvious example of this. And as a kid, before she played D&D, she played a lot of video games.
It was very familiar to me when I began playing D&D later in life to see experience points, health points, you know, stats. All of that was like, yeah, this is not a very big leap at all from the video games I grew up and many other people grew up playing. And then you realize like, wow, this was the bones. Without these things being created from games like Dungeons and Dragons, we might not have video games be really the way they are today.
Okay, so I can see how D&D has had a big impact on geek culture, but then how did it go from a niche thing to showing up in mainstream TV shows like Stranger Things?
That is the next leg in our quest, understanding that transition. We are at the mountain pass. I can see the road before us.
Oh my goodness.
But like any adventurers, I think we need to take a short rest.
Ah, yes, yes. I certainly feel slightly fatigued and famished myself. So we'll be back with more after our nap.
Amazon promises a world of convenience.
But that convenience is changing our lives in ways we might not expect. I'm Carolyn Adolph.
And I'm Joshua McNichols. Amazon's changing parenting.
My youngest child's first full sentence was directed at my Echo Dot.
Senior care.
This thing really had saved my life.
Our homes and our health.
It's all in season 3 of Primed. Find it at KUOW.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
So at this point in our quest, we've arrived in the late 90s. D&D has just moved to Seattle, and it's still pretty niche in its own little silo. Claire, what happened next?
Well, a few things happened. First of all, this happened.
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm a what?
A wizard and a thumper.
And then this happened.
They're taking the hobbits to Isengard!
And then, strangely enough, this happened? Do you know this meme, Anna?
No!
Oh my gosh, you are missing out on a whole world of famous lines from Lord of the Rings remixed into techno songs.
What have I been doing with my life?
I don't know. So this was a defining part of my teenage experience, the Lord of the Rings and the Harry Potter movies, but also the internet culture around them. For example, do you know the Harry Potter Puppet Pals?
No, I don't, sadly.
Okay, it's this series of videos that are satires of Harry Potter done with hand puppets. And the most popular one is just a song made up of characters saying their own name.
Severus Snape.
Dumbledore.
Snape. Severus Snape.
Dumbledore.
Snape.
Ron.
Severus
Ron
Snape.
Weasley.
Snape.
Ron.
Snipe.
Oh, yeah. Snipe. Yep. I think somebody showed that to me at one point.
I must have watched that video 100 times, and it has almost 200 million views on YouTube, so obviously I'm not alone. So these stories, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, they had first lives as books, and then they had second lives as these huge blockbuster films. And then they had this third life on the internet, where they became memes and they generated parodies and fan fiction. And through that, they became part of our common language.
All of this allowed people to talk about fantasy, you know, elves and dwarves and things in a way that didn't feel immediately discounted.
That's Greg, the D&D communications person. And he said that today, 20 years later, these stories are having another life.
Now those people who loved those movies when they were kids are, you know, either school age or having children of their own, and it is no longer a something that only a small subset of the culture loves. They can talk about these things and not feel that they are it's a niche anymore.
Anna, before Lord of the Rings, could you imagine an epic fantasy film with wizards and quests and dragons winning the Oscar for Best Picture?
You know, I never really thought about it before, but I guess not.
Exactly. But that happened. And now we have things like Game of Thrones and Stranger Things and the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. And these are stories that are geeky at their core, but they are hugely popular with all sorts of people, not just geeks.
And then, in turn, this big cultural shift helped make other geeky stuff more mainstream, like D&D?
Yeah, it really normalized geeky things. But I think D&D's popularity also has to do with the game itself and the impact that it has on your mind.
On your mind. What do you mean?
Well, once again, I have some experts to help explain. I'd like you to meet Adam and Adam.
I'm Adam Johns. I am one of the executive directors of Game to Grow and a licensed marriage and family therapist.
My name is Adam Davis. I'm the other executive director of Game to Grow, and I'm a professional game master.
Ooh, a professional game master. What does that mean?
So the game master, remember, is the person who leads the Dungeons & Dragons game. They make up the world and set the challenges. And the Adams are both therapeutic game masters, which means they use D&D as a tool to help people with their mental health. They mostly work with kids who are on the autism spectrum or have anxiety or ADD, things that make it hard for them to socialize.
And how would you use D&D as therapy?
So the Adams told me they will actually design situations that help their players work on skills in a way that's kind of fun and less scary than being in a normal therapy setting. So, for example, if a player is having a hard time speaking up in groups, they would design a scenario where that person's character is the only one, for whatever reason, who can speak to a ghost that they need to negotiate with, or they're the only person who can convince the king to help them with their quest.
And when they do that, when that character experiences growth or experiences a story, the player gets to extrapolate that same growth or that same opportunity for growth into their own lives. Some of it is just play and having fun and sitting down in a pro-social space. And some of it is really based around this idea of your character grows and you get to see how they grow and you get to go, that's opportunity for me to grow, or those are lessons that I get to take away from the character as well.
So to make sure I understand how this works, playing D&D helps these kids work on concrete skills. And because they're role-playing, they benefit from seeing their character overcome things and grow.
In a nutshell, yes, that's exactly right. And the concrete skills are pretty specific to the therapy part of Adam's work. But that opportunity that he described to grow through role-playing, that's something that anyone can get from playing D&D.
Interesting. And are there other benefits people can get from playing?
Yes, Adam Davis, the other Adam, he brought this back to the social aspect of D&D.
Social connectedness can have so many positive impacts throughout your life. If you have a social network, you have decreases in obesity, decreases in drug addiction, decreases in sexually transmitted diseases. That all comes from feeling like you're part of a community.
So there are some very real physical benefits to just being around people. And these days, a lot of people are spending more time alone or in front of a screen and less time interacting with other people.
And there's something that Dungeons & Dragons is tapping into that is is primordial in the human experience, that it is the solution to what so much of modern, certainly American society, is giving us, which is a lot of isolation, a lot of loneliness. It is a rampant problem in America right now, that people don't have a community. And Dungeons and Dragons is a weekly or biweekly or maybe even monthly opportunity to see people and matter.
I don't think I would have ever thought of Dungeons and Dragons as an antidote for loneliness.
Yeah, that really surprised me as well, but it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that element of the game is one reason it's become really popular in the past few years.
Well, Claire, this has been a fun journey, but to complete our quest, we need to find the answer to the listener question. What is it about the Seattle region that makes geek culture thrive?
Yes, as we said earlier, there are a lot of things that contribute to geek culture thriving here. D&D coming here, Wizards of the Coast being based here, that's definitely one thing. But here's the bigger answer that our quest has revealed to me. Seattle is a place where communities of people work together on creative problem solving. That kind of work is really part of the city's DNA. And that's why geek culture thrives here, because those things are core to what geek culture is all about.
Interesting. So a few words that I'm hearing come up a lot: communities, problem solving, creativity.
Yes, all three of those are really important to D&D and why it's so popular. And they've become core to geek culture itself, partially through D&D's influence. In fact, Anna, do you remember what I did at the very beginning of this episode?
You packed snacks and a staff and a wand.
Yes, but before that, I went to Mock's boarding house and I asked people what they thought of our listeners' question.
Of course, of course.
So in other words, I went to a community of people and I asked them to creatively solve a problem with me.
Aha, yes, very, very clever. But you said this kind of thing is in Seattle's DNA. Where do you see those traits specifically in the city overall?
Well, I think our music scene is a great example. Seattle is home to a bunch of artists who spend their time working with each other to make music, and they're also figuring out how to make a living as a musician. Both of those are problems that need teamwork and creative solutions. And our history as a musical city draws new creative people here every day. And interestingly, Greg made the same point about the tech industry, which is a very different part of the city. But he pointed out companies like Microsoft and Amazon are bringing people together from all over the world and asking them to solve problems in healthcare and communication and all sorts of different things.
I think it just drew a lot of creative minds that were open to new ideas and wanting to push the boundaries of what's possible. And that's Dungeons and Dragons. That's geekiness to a T, is all of those things.
Aha. Okay, so it's this mix of creative communities that makes geek culture thrive in Seattle.
Yes, that is the ending that our quest has brought us to.
Quest complete.
Yes, now we just have to figure out how to get home again.
I'm sure we'll figure out a way. If only there was like a teenage sorceress with a bad attitude who could help us out. Claire McGrain, KUW producer, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.
And now, to honor Seattle geek culture, I will read the credits in a wizard voice. If you have a question about Seattle or our region, head on over to our website, kuow.org/soundcues, and drop us an owl. Or call us at 206-616-3805 and leave us a voicemail. A KUOW reporter might look into your question for you. Sound Cues is a production of KUOW in Seattle. Kyle Norris is our producer. Jeannie Yandel is our editor. Our production team includes Deborah Wong, Catherine Banwell, Gil Agutter, Jill Jackson, and Brendan Sweeney. Michael Parker composed our theme music. Additional music in this episode composed by Blake Ewing. I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock, Wizard Extraordinaire. Thanks for listening.